Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. No guest today. No guest. We don't need one. Because Ken Bulkey, Sinbin.Vegas, isn't as popular as Jesse was wrong. It's still not as popular as Jesse was wrong. It's never going to be as popular as Jesse was wrong. Jesse Was Wrong is still the number one downloaded Rink Rats podcast of all time. Jesse Granger, how does it feel to be greater than Sinbin.Vegas?
I guess it feels okay. I mean, me admitting I'm wrong. I guess.
How does it feel that your failures are greater than the success of Sinbin.Vegas?
I mean, nothing can outweigh the failures of my predictions on this team so far, I guess. I don't know. It's not even that it was more downloaded than the Sinbin one, but like we've had Gerard Gallant on here, we've had Brad May, we've had Alex Tuck.
Right.
None of those.
It's crazy. Alex Tuck was actually a pretty big one.
Yeah, and that was before. That was like what, back in like training camp, like when he wasn't Alex Tuck that he is now.
Right. It was early in the Rink Rats version 2.0 in our history. But the Alex Tuck one's done really well. I mean, they've all done really well. So thank you, the listener, for seeking us out, downloading us every week, listening to us, talking about, you know, what we would do differently than Gerard Gallant because we know better. What we'd do differently than George McPhee because we know better, and all that stuff. And really, just every time we can point out when Jesse Granger's wrong, we will continue to do that.
And speaking of Alex Tuck,
yes,
I was down at the Fan Fest on Fremont, just not back in the media section, just kind of
taking it in.
Yeah, with the fans, sort of.
Yeah.
And I think Alex Tuck got the biggest cheer and the most attention of any player on the team, at least from the section that I was standing with, which was surprising to me.
Yeah. So this isn't something that we talked about that we were going to discuss today. But since you bring up Alex Tuck and we've talked about him now three times in the first 5 minutes of the podcast, you love Alex Tuck. You think he is the future captain.
I absolutely do.
Give us 60 seconds on why Alex Tuck should be the future captain that will probably be claimed as other people's tweets, and they will tweet it out and steal your ideas.
All right, so from the very beginning, I mean, the first thing he did as a Golden Knight.
Hashtag branding.
Decided to come to development camp when now we can clearly see he had no business being at development camp.
True.
He is a legit NHL starting player. Mm-hmm. He didn't belong with all these kids that were invites and a couple draft picks at the Las Vegas Ice Center, which is a fantastic facility.
But they love you there.
But he decided to show up anyways, be a leader, show these. He even said, I'm here to show these kids how to be an NHL player.
Sure.
Does that, gets to training camp. He goes from the veteran to probably the youngest guy in the group. He's still showing leadership. He's the one, go back and watch the preseason games, when the guys are walking out of the locker room onto the ice, it's not Belmar, it's not England, it's Alex Tuck fist bumping everyone as they walk past. The other night, we're watching the game on TV. I want to say it was the Tampa Bay game. Mm-hmm. There's a timeout late in the game. It's James Neal, Alex Tuck, all these veteran players around a rookie. It's Alex Tuck commanding the huddle, yelling at guys, telling them what they need to do. Obviously, you can't hear what he's saying on the broadcast, but he was clearly leading that huddle.
Sure.
I just feel like your captain doesn't have to be your best player. Tuck may very well be the best player,
but
I don't know that. I just think it doesn't have to be your best player. It needs to be the leader, and I think Alex Tuck just has that. I think he's got he just is a captain.
Right. Like, and it's so funny when you talk about captains, especially in hockey, because there's this default notion that it has to be your best player. Like Erik Karlsson, is he really a great leader?
And Ovechkin, you could say the same thing with
Ovechkin.
That's
the other name I was going to bring up. Like, is Ovechkin really a great leader? And oftentimes, like by that logic, Patrick Kane should be the captain of the Chicago Blackhawks, but I wouldn't trust Patrick Kane to lead anybody.
Yeah.
Except if it's going to be in a seminar on how to beat up cab drivers and assault women. I'm just saying.
Yeah. No, you're right.
But like, you know, and kind of keep going back and forth with Connor McDavid as to whether or not he should be the captain. And I'll tell you why. At first, I just thought best player. Obviously, they're just going to throw the C on him. I don't know that he was ready when he got it. And
I think the Oilers are hoping he grows into the captain by having the C on him. I think it's more of a, let's just give him the C. Yeah, this kid's clearly going to be, he's clearly going to be our franchise for the next 20 years.
Right.
We might as well just give him the C and hope he grows into it.
And I'll tell you why I'm kind of going to the other side now, where I think that he's maturing at a much faster rate and that he may turn into a really good captain. He scored his 200th point mm-hmm. in the game against the Golden Knights. I was in the locker room. He was made aware that it was his 200th career point and that he was, I think, the third fastest active player mm-hmm. to do so ahead of Sidney Crosby. And his response was fantastic. He looks at me. He's just like, yeah, whatever. I don't care. It doesn't matter. We won. That's all that matters. And it wasn't like one of those scenarios where, like, you bring a stat to a guy and he's like, oh, yeah, I was unaware of that. And I had it circled on my calendar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he genuinely was like, yeah, I had no idea. That's cool. I guess it's cool that I did it on my birthday, but 2 points means more to me. So McDavid was fantastic after the game.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been interesting to see how he was if after a loss. But after a win, he was fantastic and kind of changed my opinion on his ability to lead.
Yeah.
Really. So now that we're off topic, let's kind of get into something that I've really just been so angry about on Twitter for the last 5 days because I don't understand people in hockey. Like, I don't understand media members. I don't understand, quote, smart hockey people like Ray Ferraro, like Jeremy Roenick.
I think you're loosely using that term.
I said, quote, yeah, okay. Quotes, smart hockey people like Ray Ferraro and Jeremy Roenick. And pretty much anybody that's come out and defended Andrew Cogliano and said, Andrew Cogliano's played a lot of games in a row, and therefore he should be allowed to headshot a guy in Adrian Kempe. 2 seconds after Kempe releases the puck, it's a late hit to the head. Principal point of contact was the head. Okay, principal point of contact was a hit directly to the head. 2 seconds late. He was suspended. Get over it. Like, it's so nonsensical to say, you know, Andrew Cogliano, he's a really good guy. He's never been in trouble before. He's played all these games in a row, and that somehow means something more than the health of another guy that he just hit in the head. NHL Department of Player Safety, can you guys just, you know, like, look the other way on this? Like, I know concussions are a really big deal in this sport, and, like, you know, your marquee player missed 2.5 years of his prime because of concussions and hits to the head, and you said at that point that you were going to really crack down on hits to the head. But now it's just a thing that you can't do because all of a sudden an Iron Man streak is broken.
Yeah, I wish we were on opposite sides of this because this could be, like, really heated.
Right.
But, I mean, I couldn't agree more. For one, I think Iron Man streaks are stupid and pointless.
Dumbest thing ever.
Is it good to have your guy out on the ice a lot? Of course it is. It's a great quality to have of you can stay healthy, you don't get banged up a lot, you can play through some injuries.
Right.
But him playing 599 of the last 600 is no different than him playing 600 in a row. I mean, you just had him out. Like, the streak aspect of it is stupid and pointless.
Yes.
And if, let's just for a second pretend it's important. Let's just pretend that having an Iron Man streak is an important thing and it's mm-hmm. a good accomplishment.
Yep.
Part of the reason you have that Iron Man streak is because you don't make stupid illegal hits. I feel like, because people are like, if you ask somebody, why is it important to be an Iron Man? Well, they don't get injured. They can stay healthy. They're always there for their team. And part of that is not being an idiot and committing illegal hits so that you get suspended. So if you're going to give him a pass and let him play, even though he should be suspended, you're actually diminishing the streak because that's part of the streak, not getting suspended. If you make an illegal hit, you should be suspended. It doesn't matter if you've played zero games in a row or 600. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Now, what's funny about this is people that continue to tell me that the streak means something. Okay. So number three on the list of consecutive games played is Steve Larmer. Okay. Steve Larmer played 884 games consecutively for the same team. And you want to know what ended his streak? He didn't get healthy scratched. He didn't get hurt. He didn't make a suspendable hit. It wasn't anything like that. It was a contract dispute. He simply didn't want to play for the team that he was playing for. He demanded a trade, got traded, missed games because of it. He effectively ended his own streak because it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it's pointless.
It's so stupid. And then, okay, and then last night, the Kings played the Ducks. And now, there was a player in that game that should not have been playing in that game. That's Dustin Brown.
Absolutely.
And we will, and everyone knows my history as a Kings fan, and that's fine. Dustin Brown should have been suspended, and I think he should have been suspended for more games than Andrew Cogliano was. Andrew Cogliano got two games. While it was a hit to the head, I don't know that Andrew Cogliano, there wasn't intent there. At least I don't think that there was intent. He did see Kempe the entire time, but I don't think that that's the type of player Andrew Cogliano is.
It wasn't as vicious as the Dustin Brown one.
No. It wasn't. And I'd argue that a lot of Schultz's positioning made Dustin Brown's hit look a lot worse, but you cannot have a player in that position and not let up.
If a guy is sliding on his knees, not any threat to you, the puck, or the play, you're just angry at him.
Yes, yeah.
He's sliding on his knees face first towards the boards. You cannot take your hockey stick
cross-check him
in the back of the helmet, causing his face to ricochet off the boards. You can't do that.
Yeah, but so here's the problem. When you have people complaining about when the Department of Player Safety gets it right, how they should just turn a blind eye. He's a good guy. He's a good player. He hasn't been in trouble before. And you have to really understand the verbiage when it comes to repeat offender. It's within a certain time frame. It's on certain plays. And it only really factors in not with suspensions, but with fines.
Yeah.
Okay? So in the same way that Andrew Cogliano was not a repeat offender, neither was Dustin Brown. If you read into everything that it says in the CBA. So if you're complaining that Andrew Cogliano got off and you're up in arms about Dustin Brown not getting suspended, you don't have a leg to stand on. You can't complain one way or the other. You can't have your cake and eat it too.
They should both have been suspended.
Absolutely. I totally agree. But the people that are complaining about Andrew Cogliano have no basis now to bitch about Dustin Brown. Because what happened with Dustin Brown is exactly what you wanted to see happen with Andrew Cogliano.
Yeah. The craziest thing is a lot of these people that have come out in favor of Cogliano are former players. And you would think former players of all people know how dangerous it is out there, know how easily someone can seriously injure you if they want.
Right.
You'd think they would be on the side of player safety, but clearly not.
No, I said yesterday, I said, you know, if Zach Rinaldo did what Andrew Cogliano did, minimum 5 games, right?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Minimum 10 maybe? Like, you would be calling for his head.
And that's history, obviously, but...
But it's the same play. The exact same play with a different player gets a completely different result.
And I disagree with that. I'm a very black and white by the books. Yeah. If you commit an illegal hit and it's suspendable, you should be suspended. I don't care if you're Sidney Crosby or if you're some guy that never plays on the fourth line.
Right.
The Dustin Brown hit to me was worse.
I absolutely agree. I think they both should have been suspended.
Dustin Brown should have not been suspended for the following game against the Ducks. He should have had to fight Kevin Bieksa. Like, literally, if I was the commissioner of the NHL, I would come out with the ruling. Okay, you both have to start. You have to line up next to each other at the faceoff. When the puck drops, you have to fight Kevin Bieksa.
Yeah, but the problem with that is he didn't hit a Duck. So
but Kevin Bieksa is the most terrifying human being in the NHL to fight. He's going to Superman punch your face into oblivion. I want to see it.
Then
when they get out of the penalty box, they have to just fight again 5 times. 5 times they have to fight. Then he's suspended for 5 games. So you have to fight Kevin Bieksa.
He's going to need the 5 games
to
recover. 5
consecutive times, then you're suspended. That's what the punishment should have been.
See, I tend to agree with that, but I feel like it should have just been a player on the Penguins. Like, the next time they play the Penguins, he's got to line up with Ryan Reeves and get his ass handed to him.
Yeah, but Ryan Reeves wouldn't hand him his ass as entertaining in an entertaining fashion as Bieksa would have.
Well, no, because Bieksa would be one punching out, and I don't want to see one punching out. And if he connects, Dustin Brown's not going to be able to line up four more times. He's going to have a concussion.
One of his players will have to like hold him up.
The entire Kings?
One of his players will just have to hold him up for the next.
No,
you can't cross check the back of a guy's head into the boards.
I know.
I hate Dustin Brown so bad.
Ah, man. Yeah, I've got appreciation for Dustin Brown, but I don't appreciate that hit.
I was there for his, 1,000th game?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they did the whole ceremony.
Yeah.
And then a couple weeks later, he's trying to murder people on the ice, essentially.
Hey, come on now. This league is all about murdering people on the ice. Todd Bertuzzi still played a game after what
That's
did.
That's true.
So there's all that. So, last thing on Cogliano, because I thought it was really funny. The Anaheim Ducks, last night was Cogliano's first game back from his suspension and the restart of his Ironman streak, because he's only got to play 15 more seasons or whatever.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing about it, too. Like, no one cares about the Ironman streak, but when he passes, when he plays 900 and whatever consecutive games without missing from an injury or without being healthy scratched, then they're just going to amend it anyway. Someone's going to be like, Andrew Cogliano played 975 games consecutively without missing due to injury. We're just going to change
With that little asterisk.
Yeah, it'll just be revisionist history. It's fine. But the Anaheim Ducks put together a video package of Andrew Cogliano with how many games he played, and you're still our Iron Man. And I'm like, oh, shut up. Half those games weren't even with you. So shut your mouth. And second, who cares?
Yeah. I mean, Honda Center, the entertainment pregame, during the game, postgame at Honda Center, horrendous.
That doesn't surprise
me. People that aren't longtime hockey fans that kind of have hopped on this sport with the Golden Knights don't understand how spoiled they are at T-Mobile.
Yeah.
T-Mobile is unbelievable with how good the music is, the bass in the music, just the volume of the music, the lights, everything. It feels like you're at a party, like you're in a nightclub at T-Mobile Arena. It is, and I think people a lot of people take that for granted, thinking this is what it's like when you come to a hockey arena.
Right.
That's not the case. I've went to Anaheim twice. I feel like, so I would compare T-Mobile pregame when their players are skating around and they're playing John Wick mode, and then they go to put your hands up in the air,
best
all that stuff.
Intro song ever.
Yes. I would compare that to a nightclub. I would compare waiting for the Ducks to play to, like, you know how when you get to the movie theater, like way too early before the previews, and it's just got like that music, like kind of playing very quietly in the back, and it's like showing you like movie trivia questions on the screen.
Right, yeah.
That's the Honda Center before a game.
Wow, that's depressing.
It's not good.
No.
Then the players come out and they're playing like Limp Bizkit and just like horrible music from like the early night. Like, yeah, it's awful. It's so bad. Now, Staples was much better. It wasn't nearly as good as T-Mobile.
Right.
But it was much better than Honda Center. So the fact that the Ducks have just had a horrible tribute video is not surprising at all to me.
So one of the other things I want to talk about real quick, and the Edmonton game. We keep talking about the atmosphere at T-Mobile Arena. Have you seen anything or felt anything like what you felt during the national anthem? I mean, it was insane how electric that building was. First of all, with the Canadian fans, and I'm gonna highlight and I'm gonna give a shout out to the Edmonton Oilers fans. At least during that moment, I don't know what they were like after the game. I didn't see any of them. I didn't have to suffer through their salt, but during the national anthem, they did their thing. They sang, "Oh Canada." It was electric. The American fans, they took over. They sang the Star Spangled Banner. And the Canadian fans, to me, I thought were very respectful. I think they actually sang along too. It was very loud. It was a crazy atmosphere. I've never felt the energy in that building like I did against the Edmonton Oilers.
It was very cool. And like you said, especially during O Canada when they sang it, I thought Maple Leafs fans were louder during the game. Because I've been asked this question by a lot, like, oh, which team has brought the most fans? And I think there are three or four teams that you could argue are, like, Edmonton brought a lot, Toronto brought a lot, Detroit had a bunch, Chicago had a bunch. But I think, so it's tough to say, well, this team had more. But I think the loudest opposing fans that have come to T-Mobile during the game have been Toronto for me. But, I mean, yeah, the national anthem was very cool.
Oh, it's badass.
And then obviously the Americans sang theirs, and then you had the whole night thing like everyone else. And I'm a huge fan of that. It's awesome.
Oh, it's great. No, it's fantastic. And it just keeps, there's no other building. I can't imagine there's another building outside of, I don't know, maybe outside of like Toronto that, or Edmonton Montreal. Now in Montreal, where that's the energy every single game.
Yeah. I mean, I ask the players every time they go on a road trip and they come back, I'm like, compare it.
Mm-hmm.
Because these guys obviously have, most of them have been playing a league forever, but I mean, it's hard to remember 3 years ago or whatever. So whenever they come back from a long road trip, and I'll probably do the same thing. Although this one, they went to four arenas that don't really have much.
Yeah, the
energy.
Game last night looked like it was attended by a ton of five people.
Yeah. But no, but I, and like when they went on that East Coast road trip and I was like, compare it to Madison Square Garden. Multiple players told me, not close.
Not
T-Mobile's
close,
better than Madison Square Garden, which is insane. But and of all the places they've been, the only one that I've had players tell me is up, like T-Mobile's about equal with Montreal, which is the trinity for hockey arena. I mean, like that's as good as it gets.
It's the Holy Grail.
And T-Mobile's already there, first year in.
Yeah.
Now the newness, obviously, people are excited. We'll see if it's there 5 years from now, but it's really awesome. And it's not only is it the fans, but I think the team does a really good job with the entertainment.
I think the in-game entertainment is fantastic. I know that I complain a lot about the Sweet Golden Knights, but that's literally the only thing that I have a gripe with, if I'm being completely honest. But the in-game entertainment, I don't think is going to get worse. I think it's just going to get better, because I think these guys that are behind it are really in tune with A, what this city is, and B, what the people want to see when they come out to the game.
They are transforming it slowly without like making any huge changes. The smoke that shoots up from the from the end boards was not there for the first like 15 home games. They just added it, and it kind of went unnoticed. And they keep changing little things, tweaking little things. I'm always talking to Johnny Greco whenever I run into him before the game. Yeah. And he's the, for those that don't know, he's the head of entertainment. And he keeps telling me they're just constantly looking for ways to change it. And it's funny because him and his team, I mean, they would have thought we got a couple years before we got to figure out some extra stuff for playoffs. But no, you got a couple months.
What do you think happens when the Excalibur thing in the playoffs? You think anything changes there? You think like they have a duel or something? Maybe they joust?
I don't know. Well, Foley's original idea was that the sword be in the ice, which I don't know if
I don't know how you do that.
I bet that's what Foley's telling them. Like, hey guys, the stone is cool, but like for playoffs, we're gonna have to put it in the actual ice. And they're like, I don't know if we can do that. Like, can we just make a hole at center ice?
I don't know. It's gonna wreck havoc on faceoffs. Like, that's horrible.
That's just another home ice advantage for the Golden Knights.
Really, really quick, last thing on this. Before the players came out for warmups, there was an extended look into the tunnel for the Golden Knights. And you could see Marc-Andre Fleury getting loose. You could see James Neal coming out. You could see the guys getting ready. And I thought that was a really, really cool touch, because like we see them walk out to the ice, but we have no idea really what's going on right there in the locker room, what they're doing to hype themselves up as Jesse opens up a Red Bull, because he's super professional. You could tell
it's
which
podcast.
One. Yeah, you could tell which one writes for a paper and which one's on the radio. That's all I'm saying. but I thought that was a really cool look. It was unique in that you get to see what these guys are like right before they get on the ice, what kind of things they do, what kind of rituals, like who needs to come up and fist bump who before you can start walking out. I thought that was really cool.
I agree. And it was Belmar that was doing the fist bump in that time. But still staying steady with Tuck. Wear the C for this team.
Is he going to be the first captain in team history?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. When do you think that happens?
Maybe not next year, but the following year.
So you think they go 2 years without a captain?
They could. I could also see him getting it this upcoming season. I mean, if he treats this offseason like he did last offseason, now he knows all these guys. If he's the one holding during the offseason, if he's the one getting the guys together, hey, let's do a voluntary workout. Let's do this. Let's do that. I could see him getting it next season. He's still really young. I mean, the dude's just turned 21. Like,
sure.
So, and he's not a number one pick like McDavid is and Auston Matthews are. Or does Auston Matthews wear the C? He doesn't, does he?
He's the unofficial captain.
Yeah.
I think he doesn't even wear a letter. No A, no C, nothing. Now, I think that has more to do with Lou Lamoriello and Mike Babcock just being old school.
Exactly, yeah. And Gallant is he's not old school like those guys, right. but he is a little, I mean, he's an old school guy.
Yeah.
So I think it could take a couple years, but yeah, I think if you make me pick one, who's the first captain of the team? I think it's Alex Tuch.
So here's a question that I have for you, and then I swear we're going to talk about other stuff, but our last episode was hashtag cup and one. Mm-hmm. If the Golden Knights do win the Stanley Cup this year, who gets it first?
Marc-Andre Fleury.
You think Fleury's going to accept it?
Yes, absolutely.
Interesting.
Who would you say?
I'd say Derek Englund.
I think, so, I mean, usually it's the captain. Has a goalie ever gotten it first? No, because there's always a captain on the team?
No, yeah. When Dominic Hasek won it with the Red Wings, I feel like he was the second to touch it.
Well,
it was immediately passed off to him.
Just like when the Avs won and Sackett gave it right to Ray Bourque.
I don't think I've ever seen a Stanley Cup awarded to a team that didn't have a player wearing the C.
That's true. We're gonna have to go back and look.
Yeah,
that's a story to write. Thank you, Ryan.
You're welcome.
Thank you for doing my job.
This is what I do. I take care of you. You take care of me. We do this podcast.
But goalie kind of changes things because it's just different for a goalie.
Right.
Same reason he can't wear the C.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it would be Englund because I don't feel like like Ray Bourque, for example.
Yeah.
That old guy who he wasn't the best player on the team. He was probably like the eighth best player on the Avs when they won.
Yep.
But everyone wanted him to get that cup. Everyone had been waiting so long. I don't think there's that with Derek Englund.
I don't think there's that either, but I feel like you're looking at a guy that is kind of the embodiment of the city. He is the quote captain concierge.
Yeah.
He's the one that's kind of helped everybody get acclimated here. The fans absolutely love him.
Yeah. Maybe James Neal would get awarded the cup. Who are they handing the cup to? Maybe James. I just don't think it's Englund.
What if it's all three guys wearing the A that day?
Just together?
Yeah, just all three of them.
I don't know.
Like Jason Garrison finally gets to come out onto the ice with his jersey with the alternate captain on it, and he's like, hey, I did something.
Wear the Chicago Wolves jersey out
there. Yeah, it's horrible. Poor guy. When's he getting into a game? When do you think he's going to get into a game? Because he's got to play at some point when somebody gets injured.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they're going to force him into the lineup. I mean, I don't think it hurts the lineup all that much.
If you swap
him out. I thought he played well before they sent him down. I do think that move, and there are people that disagree with me, but I think that move by bringing Garrison back to the roster proves that John Merrill was actually hurt. And this was not a, do you feel like getting waived or does your ankle hurt type of thing? Because that was the general consensus, and I was one of the people that said, "Okay, yeah, how convenient that a guy comes off IR. You're going to have to waive somebody."
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
undisclosed, but it's still undisclosed.
He didn't look like he was hurt during the game. He didn't miss any shifts. All of a sudden, he's just undisclosed injury.
Sure.
And I said, "That's the way of getting around the 23-man roster."
Yeah.
But if that was the case, and he was actually not hurt. Now that you need a defenseman, why would you go through the trouble of bringing Garrison up here when he's going to have to pass through waivers if he goes back down, unless he stays up till the trade deadline, when you could easily solve this by just activating John Merrill?
No, I agree with you. I certainly it lends a little bit of credence to the fact that he's actually hurt, but what the hell is he hurt with? You talked to him.
I talked to John Merrill.
Yeah, how'd that go?
Shortly after his
contract extension.
Yep. And I was like, hey, John, how you feeling? And he's like, I'm feeling good. Why? Like, he's so confused. Like, why would you ask me how I'm feeling? I'm like, John, you're on the IR. How are you feeling? Oh, I'm just getting better every day. I just keep progressing. I just gotta try to get back as fast as I can to help the team.
What's getting better every day? What's progressing? It's still undisclosed.
His undisclosed is getting better every day.
Like, and that's the only thing to me that's still weird about this whole thing is that Luca Spezza going on IR was the most specific injury that we've ever gotten. The most up-to-date, every single detail of what happened and what has transpired since the injury was there and present immediately after Luca Spezza went to IR, but we still have absolutely no idea if it's upper body, lower body. I assume it's part of his body. It's got to be, right? Like, we have no idea what's wrong with John Merrill.
Yeah. And like I said, I was very suspicious of the injury when they announced it. But like I said, it makes literally no sense to, if he's fine, mm-hmm. to not just act. You create a lot of problems for yourself by bringing Garrison up that you could have just bypassed by just activating John Merrill.
That's a good point.
And it's been a week. You have to, obviously, when you go on the IR, you have to be out for at least 7 days. It had passed the 7 days, so there was no reason for him to not just be activated. So he's clearly got something wrong with him, whatever it is.
Right, exactly. So let's talk about a team that's got something wrong with them, and that's the LA Kings. You wanted to talk about this.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's important because it was the Golden Knights and the Kings. It was mm-hmm. a two-team race for yep. the Pacific Division, and all of a sudden, in a matter of a week and a half, it's now a one-team race.
Yeah.
The Golden Knights now have a 10-point, and this is with losing three of four. They've lost three of four. Now, they got points in two of
four.
Them.
Yeah, you know.
They got points in two of them. So they've gotten points in three of their four games since the bye, but they've only won one game since the bye in four. With this slump that they're having, they've extended their lead in the Pacific Division to 10 points.
Right.
Which is insane.
It is.
And it's not because the Golden Knights are playing well right now. It's because the Kings are awful.
Yes.
They are now out of the playoff picture mm-hmm. as of this podcast being recorded.
Sounds about right.
They're currently ninth yep. in the West behind the Avalanche, who, real quick, we won't go on this, but the Avs are in the eighth spot. They would have to come to Vegas for the first round of the playoffs. I'm going to guess the Avs are probably not thrilled since the last time they came here, they lost 7-0 to a third-string goalie. We won't go. That's all we'll say right there. But anyways, the Kings. I think it's a major storyline for the season of the Golden Knights that the Kings seem to have. They may not be that team to challenge them. Maybe it's San Jose. Maybe it's Calgary.
I'm still holding out hope that it's Calgary, and I'll explain why. We haven't seen them, but I would argue, given the amount of talent that's on the Calgary Flames, given the fact that I do think Mike Smith was the right choice to go up there and solidify their goaltending, and I think he's been very good.
Which I was against early in the year, but I have been convinced he's playing really well.
And they've got enough agitators that are fast enough to play that I think could actually get under the Golden Knights' skin. And I want to see that. Like, I want to see the Golden Knights get pushed a little bit and watch them respond. I don't need them to be, quote, more heavy. We talked about that last week. Mm-hmm. I know Sinbin's talked about it a lot, too. I don't need them to go out there and instigate and fight. But I want to see Will Carrier get pushed back a little bit. I want to see what that does to him.
Man, he's been a wrecking ball
he
lately.
He has been. But just imagine if Will Carrier has a mission of going out there and shutting up Matthew Tkachuk.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And I think Calgary, of all the teams, I think Edmonton is built to hang with mm-hmm. the Golden Knights, and they've proven that.
Right.
But I think Calgary's built to play with the Golden Knights better than LA, San Jose, Anaheim, all those teams.
Well, and we've talked about it many times. Those three teams that you just mentioned, Anaheim, San Jose, Los Angeles, they're not fast enough.
Yeah, they aren't.
They can hit, they can try to muck up the game, but it's not going to matter because they're just not fast enough. Calgary can hit, they can muck up the game, and they're plenty fast. And the same thing with Edmonton, especially now that they've got, you know, guys like Patrick Maroon, guys like mm-hmm. Milan Lucic isn't fast enough, but he can muck it up when he needs to. And so, although losing Ryan Nugent-Hopkins isn't going to help them get into the playoffs.
That team, I was looking at some like playoff predictions thing, and it's like mathematically their chances of making the playoffs. And the Oilers, I just cannot bring myself to like to rule them out of the playoffs because sure. they just have so much talent.
Right.
And I'm looking at the percentages, and it's the Oilers have a 2% chance of making them. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I still can't believe it.
It's insane. It really
By the
is.
Way, the Golden Knights have the highest percentage of any team in the league, including the Tampa Bay Lightning, and that's because their division is so bad. The Golden Knights have a 99.8% chance of making the playoffs right now.
So you're saying it's a lock.
Yeah. That's what we said last podcast. But no, and back to circle around to that, I think Calgary could be that team, but it's partly because Calgary's playing better now, and it's partly because the Kings have just had a collapse. They're just playing awful hockey right now.
Well, the problem with the Kings is, and I'm going to bitch about changing the lines up. At the beginning of the year, you had Alex Iafallo, Dustin Brown, Andrei Kopitar. Anže Kopitar was having a career year. Mm-hmm. Dustin Brown was having a renaissance. And it was all due to the fact that they were playing with a guy in Alex Iafallo that could skate the puck. He was relentless on the forecheck. He created turnovers. He created time and space for these two guys. Dustin Brown knew what he needed to do, and that was get to the front of the net and make life hell for the goalies. Mm-hmm. And Anže Kopitar was a shooter. It all worked. But for whatever reason, when Marian Gaborik comes back, you need to be, oh, well, Marian, you're really important. We're going to throw you.
They've always played together.
Yeah, you guys have always played together, and we're going to throw mm-hmm. it up there. Even though you haven't made the playoffs in 2 years, you haven't really been anything since you won the Stanley Cup in 2014, but we're just going to do it anyway because that's what we've always done. And that's why we went to Kevin Stevens, to not do what we've always done, but he's a guy that's been there through the Daryl Sutter years that has done what they've always done, and it hasn't worked. It hasn't worked since the NHL went fast.
I completely agree. I think Iafallo is one of the most important players on that team for them.
Hands down. Mm-hmm. Hands down. Because if you had Iafallo, Brown, Kopitar, and you get Jeff Carter back, presumably soon, he's back skating, you have that 70s line reconnected. You got Pearson, you got Toffoli, you got Carter, and you have a more mature Toffoli. A Toffoli that's taken on more leadership, and he's learned how to play without Jeff Carter, so you insert that back. That's a really solid second line.
And then Gaborik, exactly.
And then you put Gaborik down on the third line with Adrian Kempe and Nick Shore or Trevor Lewis,
which
and you're good.
Yeah, which isn't a spectacular line, but just if Marian Gaborik is on your third line, you're doing all, like that's a pretty deep lineup.
Just see how much more balanced they can be.
I completely
agree.
Right
there.
Completely agree.
But you have this allegiance to Marian Gaborik and guys that got it done, but they're not 30-year-olds anymore. Yeah. They're old.
You know what's, if you're a Kings fan, you know what's the most scary thing about this slump? Is they're losing all these games with Jonathan Quick playing really well.
Yes.
It's not Jonathan Quick's fault. I've watched, because whenever the Golden Knights game ends, when they're on the road and mm-hmm. I'm not there,
yeah,
I immediately flip over to 220 and watch. It's always the Kings because they're on every freaking night.
Yep.
So I watch a lot of Kings hockey, and Jonathan Quick is playing his ass off right now. He is keeping them in games. And Jonathan Quick isn't the most stable. He isn't the most consistent goalie in the league. He's much like Fleury, goes on hot streaks. What happens if Quick stops playing like this? Then they're in real trouble.
Well, and it's so funny because when the Kings started off the year, they were getting goal scoring. They were getting Jonathan Quick that, quote, run support mm-hmm. that he needed, that he hasn't had in 3 years, 4 years, whatever it is. But, and this has always been my contention with Quick, and it's always been the thing that, while, again, as a fan of the Kings for my entire life, I could never explain my gratitude to Jonathan Quick. Without Jonathan Quick, they don't win the 2012 Stanley Cup. They don't win the 2014 Stanley Cup. I truly believe they don't win those cups without Jonathan Quick.
Especially the first one.
Especially the first one.
He was freaking unbelievable.
Phenomenal. So, but the thing that always drives me so crazy, and we saw it in the Pittsburgh game, that first goal by Patrick Hornquist, 30 seconds into the game, has no business beating an NHL goalie.
Yeah, and he's inconsistent. That's because he's so aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with Fleury. When you have a goalie that comes that far out, that's that aggressive, they're going to steal you games and they're going to cost you games. That's why a guy like Carey Price, a guy like Bobrovsky, that are not nearly as aggressive, they kind of stay in the blue. They don't come out to cut off angles. They're just really, really solid. Yep. Those guys have more longevity. They have more consistency. They don't have bad games. Carey Price, obviously, if he's facing 97 shots a game, he's going to give up some goals. But like I said, I think for the most part, when I watch Kings games, I do not leave that game thinking, man, Quick cost him tonight.
No,
I think he's keeping them in.
I don't either. And it's just the same song and dance with the Kings. Like, even the year that they had a stranglehold on the Pacific Division, I think it was 2015-16, maybe, or 2016-17. They had a stranglehold on the division, and then, and we're talking about by like a 12-point margin.
Yeah.
And the Anaheim Ducks were 15 points or 16 points behind the second-place team, which was San Jose. Anaheim just keeps winning. The Kings clinch a playoff berth and just stop playing. Just stop playing. They don't win games. They lose the division. They end up playing San Jose in the first round, and they get absolutely destroyed. And I, like, as much as I don't want this to be the Kings, it just is.
Yeah. And to bring it around to the Golden Knights, it's created a gap like the one you just talked about. 10-point gap with games on most of these teams. The Golden Knights have played fewer games than I think everyone in the division. There might be a couple teams that have played the same, but none of them have played fewer.
No.
And a 10-point lead, and that's with this little slump that they're going through right now.
Right.
And this is a tough stretch with these four road games. Then they come back home for one or two.
Two.
And then they go back for four more road games.
Yeah,
so.
And it's not two slouches either. It's
Columbus.
Columbus, and it's the Islanders.
Yep.
And I'm sorry.
They're playing well. They're playing well right now.
And anytime you put John Tavares, Matt Barzal on the ice, you got to worry about your chances. You do. They're good young hockey players.
And the goalie situation was obviously a nightmare, but they did hand it to them up in Brooklyn.
Now, let me just real quick, because we're going to get into the Avalanche, but I just wanted to bring something to your attention. Antti Niemi got the start last night for the Montreal Canadiens against the Washington Capitals.
And he won.
They won!
3-2.
He had a 9.23 save percentage, two goals on 24 shots. It was his first win of the season with his fourth team?
Third team, I think.
Yep.
Better than Carey Price, I guess.
I gotta look up his real-time stats. So
he's awful.
He's played 10 games. He started six. He's allowed 31 goals. Goals against average 4.44.
Wow, it was seven. Last time I looked at it was seven.
That's
so
what,
he's been lights out since.
What winning a game will do for you, and a 8.71 save percentage.
Yeah, I was not happy with that. I don't, as a Carey Price fantasy hockey owner, and just Carey Price, my favorite player in the league.
Yep.
I don't get many wins with Carey Price and Marat, because that's a stat that they keep, and you get points for wins by goalies.
Sure.
And I don't get many.
Yeah.
And I was not watching that game. I wasn't paying attention to that game. I see the final score, 3-2. I'm like, hell yeah, Carey Price finally got a win.
Nope.
It was Niemi.
Oh, man. It's amazing to me. Now, really quick, the Montreal Canadiens, how awesome is it for the Montreal Canadiens and their fans to go out, get Jonathan Drouin in the offseason, thinking that they finally have their number one center, because they didn't have it in Alex Galchenyuk, because he's not a center, and all you got to do is ask his coach and his GM, and they'll tell you that he's a horrible center, even though that's what he was projected to be and drafted to be. How awesome is it for the Canadians and their fans to have Drouin and Galchenyuk on the wings of their third line?
Pretty wonderful.
That's great.
The only thing I care about the Canadians is I just want Carey Price to pull a Patrick Waugh. I just want him to get 11 goals scored on him.
Yeah.
I want the fans to give a sarcastic cheer when he finally makes a save.
Sure.
I want him to break his stick.
Yeah.
Go into the press conference and say, I'm never playing for this organization again.
Sure.
I want them to then trade him to the Colorado Avalanche, and then he can win two Stanley Cups with them.
No. What the team's going to do is they're going to trade away Max Pacioretty, because, you know, they've got so much goal scoring right now.
Yeah.
With Jonathan Drouin, six on the year. You know, the 50 goal score guy. So they're just going to trade Pacioretty, and they're just going to rely on Carey Price to win every single game by a score of 1-0.
Man, and he's actually been he has not played well. He's made some good saves, but I think his confidence is just shot to hell.
How could it not be?
He's just, I just don't see, man, I don't see how you fix. I guess if you go into the offseason, you make some changes, he could kind of regain that confidence going into next year, thinking, okay, last year was awful, but I'm still Carey Price. I can still do this. But, like, man, he needs something that I feel bad for him over there.
It's unfortunate. It really is. And, it makes me a little happy. It does. Just a little bit. Just because, like,
I'm not a Montreal Canadiens hater.
I don't hate them, but I don't understand how you can have a general manager that inept. Let's talk about the Colorado Avalanche,
who are doing a spectacular job, by the way.
No, okay, listen. When you said you want to talk about the Avalanche, I was really, really excited, because When you take away a player like Matt Duchene, obviously the concern is you have a really, really, really good player who has a very high end. And you wonder what taking him out of that situation is going to do for the rest of your players. Nathan MacKinnon has been the best player in the league, in my opinion, and it's not even close, since Matt Duchene left. Why?
Because I feel like he doesn't have to defer to Duchene anymore. Right. It's his team. Mm-hmm. It's now your team. Do your thing.
Yeah.
He's been spectacular. Landeskog has been great. Mm-hmm. This team, and they're doing this without Varlamov in.
Right.
Varlamov's been out for this entire run. It's Bernier in net. And this team is playing like Joe Sakic imagined when he put them together. This team has sucked for a few years. Mm-hmm. They have a ton of really high-end draft picks, fast guys.
Right.
They're playing fun hockey right now, and I just feel like they just weren't playing the style that matched their personnel early in the year or last year.
Yeah.
I think finally they're playing kind of like the Golden Knights, some pond hockey, some transition, get out in space, don't try to have sustained offensive zone pressure, just try to score in transition, try to use your speed to your advantage, don't try to be something you're not.
Be creative. Have fun.
And like you said, McKinnon is playing really, really well. He scored two more goals the other night. And I think guys like Landeskog and just all these young players that they've been building up for the last couple years, 3-4 years, are all playing really well. Now, is it sustainable? They've had this run. They just barely got into the playoffs picture right now in that 8 spot. I don't know if they're going to they might end up falling out, but I think it is it can inspire some confidence if you're an Avs fan hoping that this team's finally going to turn it around. I think they're showing that these guys can be what they were drafted to be.
Yeah, I agree with you. And whether or not it's sustainable, whether or not they can get into the playoffs, I don't think that really matters. What matters to this team, and especially the young players who went through the garbage of last season, is that they, like you said, now have the confidence in themselves that they can play at this level. And that's going to go a long way to developing this team. Now, we were talking about the trade deadline because one of our friends on Twitter, Matt Hobbit311, proposed a trade for the Golden Knights at the trade deadline that I think was a really, really smart idea, really smart trade, and addresses the main focus that the Golden Knights need to work on. But before we get to that, I wanted to talk about what you said and the guy that you threw out there and why I don't think it's going to work.
So it's a very similar situation to the one that Matt threw out there. The Golden Knights, clearly, if you're trying to find a weakness on this team, if you're George McPhee and you're thinking, okay, let's do this. Let's try to make a run at the Stanley Cup this year.
Yeah.
What do we need to improve on? Obviously, it's the power play.
Yes.
They're freaking horrendous.
Awful.
16 in a row they haven't scored. One of the last 29.
Yep.
They've been consistently bad all year. They've had a couple games where they've showed some flashes, obviously against Tampa Bay. That's the one everyone points to. They've been bad in 90% of the games this year on the power play.
The problem with it now is it's starting to cost them games.
Yeah.
That's like before, it didn't cost them games.
And Gerard Gallant says, hey, we can go 0-4. I don't care as long as we're winning.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing. I like the fact that they are right up at the top when it comes to 5-on-5 goals scored. I'm totally all about that because you're going to need that in the playoffs. But you're also going to need to actually convert on the power play and not have it completely suck the momentum from you in a game.
Yep. So, having said that, obviously there are a lot of guys out there that you can get on the power play. Most of them are going to be extremely expensive trying to trade for them. One that I don't think will be that expensive is Tyson Barrie.
Right.
As an Avs fan, I've watched him play a lot. He is a defenseman that can quarterback that power play. This year, I mean, and the thing is, part of the reason I think he's going to be a little cheaper is he's out right now. He broke his hand blocking a shot.
Mm-hmm.
He's already missed 2 weeks. I think he's going to miss another 3 or 4 weeks, which would put him on track to return a week or two before the trade deadline.
Right.
Missing all those games, I think the Avs might be a little more likely to let him go. And also, if the Avs are still in the playoff chase, then they're probably not going to trade him. But that's still 3 weeks away, 4 weeks away. They could still fall out of the picture.
Yeah, I think obviously the next 3.5 weeks for the Avalanche are going to determine what happens with Tyson Barrie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Tyson Barrie's got 4 goals and 23 assists on the season.
That's a lot of assists.
2 goals and 12 assists are on the power play.
Yeah, that's good.
Really good. Mm-hmm. It's much higher than anyone on the Golden Knights, defenseman on the Golden Knights. And when you say, man, the Golden Knights don't have a defenseman to quarterback that power play, and the thing is, you think, well, they got Colin Miller. They got Shea Theodore. Mm-hmm. Those guys aren't passers on the power play. No. They're shooters.
No. Yeah.
Every single time Colin Miller gets the puck on the power play, he wants to fire at the net. And there's nothing wrong with that. Dude shoots 106 miles an hour. If you get a chance, fire it.
Yeah.
But they need someone that's – they need a defenseman that wants to pass, that wants to make that pass down low to those guys so they can get something that's not a point shot. This power play is literally – we have to get it in the zone, which they already suck at. They can't. Yeah. They have a serious problem carrying the puck into the zone in the power play. They keep trying these drop passes, and they never work.
Sure.
Then once they get it in there, there's nothing creative. It's get it to the point, fire it at the net. And these teams are blocking them. They're getting almost nothing through because the team can get into that shell and just protect the point shots. They don't have to worry about getting beat down low because they know when Colin Miller and Shea Theodore get the puck, that's all they're going to do is fire it at the net.
Right.
If you get somebody like Tyson Barrie to quarterback that power play, I think it makes Marchessault, James Neal, Perron, it makes those guys, Alex Tuck, it makes those guys so much more dangerous when there's a guy back there that has the ability to find that guy cutting to the net, to find that guy down low and maybe next to the crease, get him the puck and let him score.
And spreading it out.
Yes.
How often, and you talked about it, Colin Miller gets the puck, he's shooting. And the entire power play is built around getting Colin Miller the puck.
Mm-hmm. Or Theodore. Same exact thing.
Or Theodore. But if you have a guy that says, okay, you know what? I'm going to go to Colin Miller, and then I'm going to get the puck right back, and then I'm going to find a seam to Marchessault, that's going to make all the difference in the world. Just somebody that can distribute to other guys. And just a different look, something. I totally agree with you. But we're going to talk about what Matt said.
Mm-hmm. Which is the exact same idea behind it. Just a different player who has a lot longer track record of doing this.
Mike Green. UFA at the end of the year. Won't cost very much.
And that's the one thing that makes Mike Green better than Barrie in this is Barry's still got 2 years left at $5.5 million per year. So it's a little more of a... commitment,
right.
Trading for Barrie. He has to be part of your long-term future, whereas Green is more of a let's take a run at this thing guy.
Yeah, and that's what I think I like more about Green than I like about Barrie is I don't know if you want to commit to an outside piece when you've got so much already on the back end. Like you bring in Mike Green, and you're like, you know what, dude, you're here for one reason and one reason only. That's to get us points on the power play.
Yeah,
that's for us to win the Stanley Cup, and then you're walking at the end of the year because it's really not going to cost us very much. It was second round pick maybe, and then that's it. You're done.
Which Mike Green, so Tyson Barrie's got 2 goals and 12 assists on the power play.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Green, people think like he it feels like he's having a down year.
Right.
He's got 1 goal and 12 assists on the power play, almost identical to Barrie's numbers.
Yeah, and again, that's playing in Detroit.
Yeah.
Where they're awful.
Yeah, he's not with the Capitals. He's not just throwing it over to Ovechkin and letting him laser it in.
Exactly,
the top
exactly. And again, you know, Mike Green's also a guy that when he was playing with elite talent scored 30 goals in this league.
Yeah.
Now I'm not saying that he's going to come to the Golden Knights, he's going to score 30 goals or anything like that. But what I'm saying is you've got better talent on the Golden Knights than you do on the Red Wings, top to bottom.
Without a doubt.
Top to bottom.
Yeah.
You have Mike Green finding Jonathan Marchessault. Jonathan Marchessault is going to score a ton of goals on the power play.
Yep. I completely agree. And, man, by the way, Detroit, when you talk about the talent, you look at the teams that are in cap hell, and it's like, it's teams that it's like, of course they're in cap hell.
Yeah,
the Penguins,
exactly.
Of course.
Yeah.
The Blackhawks, of course they are. Of course these teams, they've got superstar players. And then it's like, oh, wait, the Red Wings are like in like the third worst shape of any team, and they have nothing. Like, who the hell are you paying all this money to? You don't have any players.
It's amazing. It honestly is so amazing to me. When I looked at the numbers before the season, and Anthony Athanasiou, they couldn't sign that guy because they didn't have cap space.
Yeah, they're like the third oldest team in the league. They have no cap space, and they suck. Like, if you're old and and your cap is high, you should be like one of those teams that's like trying to make a couple more runs, like the Blackhawks are,
right,
the Kings would be. You shouldn't be like one of the least talented teams in the league and be up against the cap. That's bad news for the Red Wings long term.
Yeah, I think Ken Holland's just checked out, man. He doesn't care anymore.
Which also means this team is in need of draft picks.
Yep.
Or talent. Just young prospects in the system. The Golden Knights are a team that before the season wanted absolutely nothing to do with giving away younger players for a veteran that can come in and help them win. But at this point, maybe you consider it. And I don't know, McPhee loves his draft picks, so I don't know what you send to Detroit to try to get Mike Green, but
I wouldn't send multiple picks. I'd send
I think at this point would you send a second rounder? Because that would probably be the price, and I don't know if McPhee wants to do that.
If you believe that the power play can win you the Stanley Cup,
yeah,
then you do it.
Yeah,
for a second rounder, because like no one's gonna care.
Yeah,
in 5 years, what that second round pick might have been, unless the Red Wings hit on it, which they have in the past, but it's going to be a different GM.
What if they don't ask for a second round pick? What if they ask for like a pick and Keegan Kolesar?
That's tough.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
See, that's tough because when you start to talk about a prospect, that's difficult because I really want to see what the prospects that are already in the system are going to become.
Well, the thing is, McPhee has not picked a player that has played poorly for the Golden Knights. Right. Pretty much every person he's picked has either lived up to expectations or exceeded them. In most cases, exceeded them.
Yeah.
You look at all these guys that he took to pass on a player, like Alex Tuch. Freaking unbelievable.
Right.
Shea Theodore has been great.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you wonder. Keegan Kolesar is one of those other guys. And when we were at development camp, we were thinking, we were almost putting Alex Tuch and Keegan Kolesar on like the same level. Like, wow, these guys have a chance to make this roster.
Sure.
Now, since Kolesar's missed, he's gotten cut from the Golden Knights, and then he's been sent down to the Quad City Mallards. He's not even in Chicago.
Sure.
So he's obviously not progressing the way that those guys are. But it, like you said, it does make you want to see what it makes you want to run that course and see if he becomes what McPhee thought he was going to be when he brought him in here.
Yeah, I don't want to see a prospect go. Like, I'm okay with a pick that hasn't been picked, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, I'm okay with a future second rounder. I'm okay with that. Like,
okay.
Just because George McPhee didn't get the chance to comb through everything and pick his guy. You know, like, you send a second round over to the Detroit Red Wings, they could pick crap. They could pick garbage in the second round.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, it's out of your hands. It is what it is. But I feel like if a second round pick next year or the following year is what's preventing you from making a move that you think could win you the Stanley Cup right now, I think that's the wrong way to look at it.
I see that. I also think McPhee is extremely hesitant to send young pieces off of his team after what happened with Philip Forsberg.
That's something
that, whether he wants to admit it or not, he thinks about when he makes trades.
I think so, yeah. Absolutely. It has to be.
Because, man, the last time I gave up on a kid, he ended up being spectacular, and it's the worst trade. It's the worst decision I've ever made in my hockey career.
Yeah. Well, that's why I say if Detroit even comes at you with we need a prospect and a pick, it's no deal.
Yeah.
Because at some point, you have to assume that they're gonna figure it out. Like, they figured out pretty much everything else. They figured out how to get a little bit of a cycle game going when they need to. They figured out, you know, how to adjust to Marc-Andre Fleury and how he likes to play the puck. They figured out how to get through and win games with a fourth string goalie. Like, they've figured everything out. I have to assume that at some point they're going to figure out the power play.
Yeah. Colin Miller needs to start hitting the net.
Well, there's that too. But they just need to give different looks.
Yeah.
Like, that's all they need to do. They need to stop going to Colin Miller.
Well, they get blocked. All of his shots are getting blocked. And same with Theodore. Like, I haven't looked at this stat, but it feels like the Golden Knights lead the league in shots blocked against. Like, teams are just blocking all their shots from the point because there's no threat to do anything else. They just know as soon as that guy gets it, just lay out. He's going to shoot it.
Yeah, and it's movement, too. Like, I don't think I've seen this team try a high slot tip.
No.
Ever.
No.
Why not? Just try it.
Because you've
got to get some movement away from the puck, and that's not what they're not doing.
Part of what's made them so good is their simplicity
and
not running a lot of different stuff. So I can see why maybe they're like, no, let's not. But you got to try something, especially on the power play. I think one of the bright spots during this little slump that they're going through has been the second line with Neil Perron and Haula, especially, like you said, trying to get a cycle game going. They do it better than any line on the team.
Yes.
And Neil's forechecking, he's not known for as a guy that is putting the hustle plays in, that is getting on the puck first, that's fighting in those corners. He has been a muscle for this team lately.
Yeah.
I think Neil is no longer just get him the puck and he'll shoot it. I think he's a guy that can do a lot more for this team. And I think, man, this might just be my imagination, but I feel like ever since these guys started getting a contract extensions and the tide has shifted from you're clearly getting traded, you're a trade piece, to maybe you're a long-term piece to this team, I think his mentality's changed a little bit from I'm going to get mine and I'm going to score my goals. And I don't think he was selfish, but I think his mentality was I need to score goals.
Sure.
To maybe he's playing a little more of a team game now, and
now
it's a good thing.
Now it's the little plays away from the puck that he's making.
Yeah.
And that's huge. But, you know, he likes it here, so he's clearly going to get re-signed because he likes it here.
Yeah.
And that's a thing, right?
Yeah. I do think he has a chance at being a long-term piece of this team.
I do, too.
We talked about it months ago. Younger than Vadim Shipachyov.
Who?
Yeah. And 30 years old is not old in the NHL. He feels old because he's been playing since I was born.
Yeah.
He's been scoring 20 goals every year since I was born.
10 years straight.
Yeah. I'm a little older than 10.
Yeah.
But he, I don't think 30 is old in the NHL now.
No,
these guys play till they're 35, like without any issue.
Yeah, and again, when we talk about Neil and an extension, it's got to make sense on the term. It can't be an 8-year deal. You're not going to sign him to an 8-year deal. But 3 or 4 years, I think you're totally fine there, especially if you start bringing up the Cody Glasses and the Nick Suzuki.
Well, the longer they stay in juniors, the better it is for James Neal's contract.
I couldn't agree more. But if you have James Neal at 33, right, presumably within this system for the next 3 years, 4 years, making those team plays, making those plays away from the puck, you have Cody Glass and Nick Suzuki come up and you see the work ethic that he's putting in as a 13, 14-year vet, it's going to rub off on those guys. Like, I know a lot of people aren't big on intangibles, but there is a way for young kids to learn what it takes to play in this league. And it's seeing a guy that's been around for a long time and been consistent for a long time, not cheating on a back check.
Yeah. Little update, Cody Glass actually got banged up in Portland. Oh. Yeah, he's lower body injury day to day. I have some Portland Winterhawk connections, so they're always keeping me updated with him.
It's head coach, yeah?
No, not head coach. Not the head coach.
You did talk to him though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked to him too on the Insider Show. He's a dry guy, Mike Johnston.
He's a hockey coach. That's how hockey coaches are. They sound dry to us because they don't want to talk to us because they don't want to tell us anything. Because what does it benefit them to tell us anything?
Literally nothing.
Yeah, Gerard Gallant. When we talked to him off the record, I mean, he's a completely different person.
Way different. Awesome.
Yeah.
Super good. And not that he's not when he's on, but, you know, he's one thing I'm going to complain about one thing really, really quick. And it's really not a slight at Gerard Gallant, but I thought it was really funny. His comments on UC Saros after the game.
He said,
oh man, I thought UC Saros played a great game. And I was going to say, What about when Jesse Granger asked you if Fleury played a good game?
Oh yeah.
I don't pay attention to goalies. I don't know. Speaking of coaches that aren't dry, just really quick, Mike Babcock is having a hard time in Toronto with the media because apparently the media thinks that they know what's best for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they have let him know that they should be doing this, they should be doing that, they should move Nylander, they should do something with Marner, they need to figure out a way to get out of this slump, even though they're about 500 and, you know, most teams are going to go through a stretch during the season where they're going to be about a 500 hockey club. You're not going to be a 650, 700 hockey club all year long. It's just not going to happen. I loved his reaction. I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically said, could you imagine where you'd be in life if you listened to every person that told you they knew better? It was a reporter asking him the question. He's like, you wouldn't have that microphone in your hand, so I'm just going to keep doing what I do. essentially. And I love that.
I like it also.
It's fantastic.
I think he gets a bad rap. I like him.
I do too. The interaction that I had with him at the expansion draft was fantastic. Because I asked him.
Oh yeah.
I was like, so what do you think? How would you assess how the Golden Knights have kind of come into the league and everything that's happened with George McPhee and all this? And he's just like, it's not my job to evaluate other teams. And I'm like, okay, Jesus. Sorry, buddy.
Like I said, hockey coaches, I mean, you have to put yourself in their shoes, and it benefits them absolutely zero to tell us anything.
Yeah.
So they're going to do, I mean, they realize it's part of the job. You have to talk to media, but they're going to give us the absolute bare minimum. And that's what Gerard Gallant does. And then as soon as the press conference ends and we talk to him afterwards for a couple minutes, just shooting the crap with him, he's a completely different person. Gerard Gallant is such a cool guy. He's very crass. He's a guy's guy. But as soon as those mics get in front of him, he knows how to put on his professional talk. And it's just unbelievable how different he speaks to the media versus just to us just talking and hanging out.
No, it's fantastic. And then really quick, before we get out of here, last thing, hashtag Cabo Flu. Care to comment on that at all?
I don't know if it's in the budget to hire a lawyer for Rink Rats.
This podcast?
Trademark. Those guys are probably like in the other studio over there?
They're across the hallway.
Yeah. So we will not comment on Cabo Flu because it is trademarked.
Oh. I didn't listen, so I don't know.
Only one person is allowed to talk about Cabo Flu. Okay. Did you know that? Once one person's talked about it, now no one else is.
It's officially their.
Because it's not like every single person that watches sports thought of the New York Giants boat picture when they saw the Golden Knights boat picture. Only one person could have been clever enough to have thought of that.
That's the connect.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I feel so stupid. I didn't get that from the picture being sent out. Oh my God.
Yeah.
All right.
Well. We better end it now before the lawyers come after us.
They're not going to listen to this. They're not going to. They'll tweet at you. They won't listen to this.
Right.
I don't think they're going to listen to Rink Rats. But our fans are going to listen to Rink Rats. The people that come back every single week, they're going to listen to Rink Rats. And if you haven't already done so, find us on iTunes. You can hit the subscribe button. If you do that, you don't even have to think about it. A new edition of the show will be in your podcast queue every single Monday, where you can hear me and Jesse complain about all the things that just piss us off, like Andrew Cogliano and how stupid he is and how stupid the Iron Man streak is, because he's going to be a really good interview when I try to get him in the locker room. Jesse, where can people find you?
At @JesseGranger_ on Twitter and LasVegasSun.com.
And you can find me at @RyanHockeyGuy on Twitter. Make sure to subscribe, and if you wouldn't mind, leave us a 5-star rating, and you don't even have to say anything. Just hashtag it, suck it, Granger. That would let us know that you really, really love us, at least me, and not so much Jesse. We will see you next week, everybody. Bye.